Thank you for listening to the podcast of The Exchange with Ed Stetzer. The Exchange is a weekly production of Lifeway Christian Resources in cooperation with Faith Radio and Northwestern Media. More information about and past editions of The Exchange audio podcast can be found at myfaithradio.com. Under Programs, select The Exchange. We hope you enjoy and are challenged by this week's podcast.
In Joseph, where he said to his brothers, "You meant this for evil against me, but God meant it for good," I started to look at my life and the pain and the adoption and the abuse and thought it would be just like God to weave all those broken bad things together for good and not only rescue me, but then enable me to be able to rescue others.
Hi, I'm Ed Stetzer. I want to thank you for joining us on another edition of The Exchange, where we talk about truth and exchange thoughts and discuss theology. As we get started today on The Exchange, we're going to be talking about a sensitive topic, human trafficking. And this issue, this episode may not be appropriate for young children. Our first guest is actually a Hollywood producer who's been putting together a film, a documentary on the connection between pornography and sexual trafficking. And my colleague and friend, Micah Fries, is going to interview Guy Noland. He's with the Salvation Army, and his movie is called Hardcore, C-O-R-P-S. And then our second guest is well-known conference speaker, friend of mine, Christine Kane, who's well-known in this space for engaging in advocacy towards the freedom of people in sexual trafficking, raising the awareness and helping people to engage effectively in the cause to free sexually trafficked women and men. Before we get to the interview, however, we're going to hear from Pastor Matt Chandler, who's going to talk to us about Christian civility.
Hi, Pastor Matt from the Village Church in Dallas, Texas. When we're talking about theology, we're talking about what is of supreme importance. In fact, the way you think about God and what you believe about God will shape everything in your life. So one of the things that we can't do with theology is say that theology and doctrine does not matter, because it is the thing that does matter. In fact, it shapes and informs almost everything we do in our churches, to how we interact with people, to how we do baptisms, to whether or not we do altar calls. But what are we to do when we disagree? Like when people who love Jesus and want to see the kingdom of God seen, loved, and established disagree on secondary matters. How are we to disagree with one another? And is there a way to disagree in a way that's distinctively Christian? Well, I think there is, and unfortunately, the internet has created a venue in which, under the shadow of being anonymous, we say things because we feel safe in saying really foolish things, because we feel like nobody really knows who's saying that, and in the end, God knows. And so, really, I think the answer to Christian civility in an internet age is to talk about the relationship that we are to have with one another as Christians. We live in a society that's driven by contracts. And so whether your cell phone, your apartment, your home, your car note, we've signed these contracts, and the contracts basically say, I'm going to do this and you're going to do this in return. And yet, the relationship that we have with God and the relationship we have with one another is not contractual, but rather covenantal. And so the best way to understand this is, if you've been to a wedding ceremony, that moment where the bride and groom turn and face one another and begin to promise things to each other, that's never contractual language. It's always covenantal. It's not, I'm going to do these things if you do these things, but it's rather, I'm going to become this for you. The vows are covenantal vows. They sound like this: for better or for worse. It's not, if things are better, I'm staying, and they come back and go, well, if you're rich, I'm staying. No, no, no. It's for better or worse, I'm with you. In rich or in poor, in wealth or in poverty, I'm doing that with you. In sickness or in health, I'm doing that with you. Well, the basis of relationships between Christians is covenantal. We are brothers and sisters. We are in family together, and we must not disagree in a way that doesn't mirror this covenant relationship. And so this means we extend the benefit of the doubt. This means where we do disagree, we make sure we're dealing with content, and we're not creating caricatures and straw men and burning things down. We don't get personal. We don't attack one another. We can dissect ideas biblically, but even then, that must be done graciously and with great compassion. And so may we learn to walk in covenant love with one another, where we mirror well the unity we should have in Jesus Christ as we disagree upon secondary matters.
Every great story begins with a voice giving shape to darkness. A storyteller speaking characters into existence, and it's good. In fact, it's perfect. Enter the villain, one who wishes to change the story, to bring death to mankind, to unmake the storyteller's good world. Our inciting incident, where everything goes wrong. The villain tells the characters they can create their own story, and they believe the lie. Death is sentenced, and the characters are enslaved. The villain is triumphant. But all is not lost. The storyteller is not idle. He has a plan, but it will take time and sacrifice. The people face extinction. Yet they are not swept away. They face death, but a substitute is given. They face captivity, and the storyteller provides their escape. Yet they remain chained by the villain. But a promise is made. Serpent is lifted high on a staff and brings healing. An unlikely king frees his people. From an ocean tomb comes a message of life, hints of a great rescuer, and then nothing. The story goes quiet. The people fear the storyteller has forgotten his promise. The rescue begins. The storyteller enters the story. He heals the sick, brings hope to the captive. He loves the unlovable. The villain plots his vengeance. He strikes, and the hero's life is given for his people. His promise fulfilled. The substitute is sacrificed. The people are again free. And the hero emerges from his tomb. He gathers his people and sends them out as storytellers. More believe. Their numbers grow. One story told over thousands of years. My story. Your story. His story. This is the Gospel Project.
Hi, and welcome to this edition of The Exchange. My name is Micah Freese. So glad to have you here. We're here on property at the Gaylord Opryland Hotel in Nashville, where the National Religious Broadcasters Annual Convention is being held. And we're really excited to have Guy Nolan with us today, talking about some new work that you've got coming out, but really a pretty broad scope of work that you've been engaging in to help bring attention to some of the social issues that we're dealing with in contemporary culture, but then also helping the church to think through how they engage those issues. And, of course, the big topic that we're going to begin with is this issue of human sexuality, particularly as it relates to sex trafficking and its relationship to pornography. You know, Oscars were recently on, and, of course, the star of 50 Shades of Grey, Dakota Johnson, was there with her mom. And I found it intriguing. I asked her mom, who's obviously a pretty well-known Hollywood actress, right. asked her, have you seen the movie? And she kind of blushed, and she said, no, and I don't plan to.
Right.
And I thought, that's an intriguing response to me from the family of the star, who themselves seem to say, there's something wrong here, something not right here. And so your point was that we've sort of tried to glamorize 50 Shades of Grey, and we've turned it into what we think is culturally acceptable, and yet it's doing irreparable damage culturally. So tie the link, not necessarily between that movie, but just between pornography and sex trafficking, and walk us through a little bit about how you've seen that play out.
Yeah, like I said, I've been inundated with this for 2 years. In fact, we're constantly in prayer for our editors and the guys that have to go through this, because they really have to. There's footage, like graphic footage, that they have to look at. And so we kind of constantly have to put hands on them and just say, hey, you know, stay strong, and I know this is difficult, but, you know, we got to get through this. And there's been even some criticism of our documentary, because although we did get a Dove Award, you know, for it, I mean, a Dove seal of approval for it is a 12-plus approval, because there is some kind of risque imagery that goes on. And really, where do you draw the line between what is entertainment and pornography. Mm-hmm. Where does that line come in? Mm-hmm. You know, well, there's various laws and obscenity laws and things like that that kind of do, but they don't really define that. You know, we rely on boards to tell us ratings and kind of guide us as to what is and what isn't pornographic material. But really, what it comes down to is whether it's 50 Shades of Grey or it's what was considered legitimate produced pornography, you know, not something that's shot, you know, in somebody's back bedroom with with their iPhone or whatever, but legitimate produced pornography where the performers are getting paid very well to do what they do. And so you can't say, oh, they're not being trafficked, they're not being forced, they're not being, you know. The line that we've seen that connects everything is really sex. And kind of the disrespect for sexuality and for women. Because once you've used a woman as an object, as a sexual object, and she's been used as a sexual object, your opinion of her and her opinion of herself is forever changed. And that cannot be reversed. She knows she's just an object. You know she's just an object. She's somebody's daughter. She's somebody's sister. Maybe even somebody's mother. But she is forever reduced to the position of being a sex object. Well, what happens inevitably is producers say, well, you know, you sold your body for sex, and the only difference between you and a prostitute is the cameras, literally. So the next step is just, you know, you might as well just remove the cameras and step out into to prostitution, which happens to a certain percentage of the girls. Nine out of 10 girls in prostitution, women who are being prostituted, are being trafficked. And whether it's by a pimp or whatever, they're being trafficked. Now, many of them don't know they are because they think that that's just the way it is, and that's and they just deal with it. But then you get into even more deviant forms of trafficking, and you get, you know, there is that element of, like in Amsterdam, of women who are kind of abducted or tricked into coming from other countries and working. But really, here and in Europe, in the United States and Canada, it's all right in our face. It's all right here, right next door, and it's all connected. And if you're using pornography, you're kind of holding up the trunk of the tree, right? Because that's where it all starts, kind of the gateway, so to speak. So, and we talk about, you know, the people, the users, and how sometimes moving, you know, it becomes a lot easier to move into the use of a prostitute. If you've been, if you've already got that in your head that this is just an object who's there for your pleasure, it's one of the most selfish things in the world. You know, it's here for our pleasure, and so now it's much easier to move to the next step of prostitution.
So, man, it just, obviously this is incredibly heavy. It makes my heart hurt as we think about it. How does the church engage? We're talking to church leaders, talking to pastors. Obviously, we want folks to see the documentary. They can get more information at hardcoremovie.com. It's C-O-R-P-S, kind of like Movie Corps, Marine Corps, hardcoremovie.com. Or they can go to savin.tv, S-A-V-N.tv, to get more information. But beyond just viewing it, how can the church engage to help kind of begin to push back against sex trafficking?
Well, that's a great question. And what we do is the third act of the film kind of addresses that and what you can do to get involved. And there's a lot of ways to get involved. Obviously, the Salvation Army has a lot of programs that fight sex trafficking. There's ways. I mean, there's donating money. There's donating time. There's actually getting involved. There's thousands, literally thousands of nonprofits out there that deal in this. There's some that actually even send out teams of people to go out and literally rescue people from trafficking situations. There are some that deal with counseling. There's ways to do it. And at hardcoremovie.com, you know, we're going to be posting a lot of those. Here's ways that you can get involved. Because we don't just want to raise awareness. We want people to actually do something. Get off the couch, get off your rear end. Go out and do something and make a difference in this. And really, you know, it's educating also our young men. I mean, the statistics that I've got about young men and the damage that, that pornography does to them psychologically and physically, not just the way they view the opposite sex, which is bad enough, and how it shapes their view of women, and how young ladies, how it shapes the view of themselves. And how we've got this entire generation learning the birds and the bees from hardcore pornography.
Right.
That's not where you want to learn healthy sexuality.
Yeah.
That is a fantasy. It's and it's detrimental and damaging.
Yeah.
We also have on our site, what's called our Save and Live Chat, mm-hmm. which people can come on. They can start their own small group Bible study,
right.
where they can actually see the other people in the group face to face. It's a video Bible study in live, in real time. They can start their own channels. Those are things they could do on our site to really start. You know, they could start their own small group studies about trafficking. They could start their own recovery groups, if they're people who need to recover from this, from pornography.
Yeah.
You could start a pornography recovery group on our site that can meet however many times a week, live video chat. Mm-hmm. So that's another way they can do it. But there's a lot of ways. They just have to look out there, and we're providing that portal for them to really look into it.
There is always an opinion on what love is, right? Everybody has an opinion on what love is. Hey, I'm Kelly Minter, and I want to invite you to join me as we dive into studying the letters of 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John. That kind of love, he says, we are to lay our lives down for others just like Jesus has laid down his life for us. We're to love that way, and that way takes love to an entirely different sphere, and that love is wholly impossible apart from Jesus Christ. Obedience always, always, always leads us in the direction of truth. John is saying, I'm proclaiming, I'm telling you all of this about Jesus so that you don't have to be alone anymore and you can be welcomed in to the fellowship, and not just any fellowship, not just any team, but the one that is based on the shared life of Jesus. I was challenged by God's truths as I wrote this study, and I hope you'll be challenged as well. Because when we say obedience doesn't matter and God's ways don't matter, we're literally robbing people of their most significant expression of love for God, which is obedience. I don't know that there are any more beautiful words in all of Scripture than the teacher is here and is asking for you. This is the book of love. And in this book, John actually tells us what love is.
Our guests today in The Exchange are ministry leader Christine Kane and Hollywood producer Guy Noland. We're talking about sexual trafficking. Let me remind you, this may not be a discussion appropriate for young children.
Christine, thank you for coming and joining our conversation here at The Exchange.
Yeah, thanks.
And so we Australians are smarter than Americans, and so just hearing you talk will raise my and all of our IQ. So talk to us a little bit about your journey, where you started and how you ended up. I'm going to specifically zero in on some of this A21 campaign.
Sure.
But why did you get there? Why is that an interest and concern for you?
I think for me, the A21 campaign, which we helped to rescue the victims of human trafficking, is a very personal one.
Yeah.
My own story is that I was born in Sydney, Australia, 1966, back with the dinosaurs. And
we were born in the same month and the same year.
But seriously? Well, the Lord had good plans for the planet.
Yes. Right there. You're my wife, you, me, all born in the year. Yeah.
And my husband, too. He was 2 days before me.
Really? He was 10 days before me? That's almost creepy.
Oh, no. Sorry. And so I was left in a hospital unnamed and unwanted in Australia. What has happened? Australia had a royal commission. All babies born between 57 and 66 in that time that were born to single mothers were forced to be adoptions. We didn't know that, so there was a great public apology. But anyway, so I was left in a hospital, adopted by my parents, the only parents that I knew for 33 years, and grew up in a very staunch Greek Orthodox culture. I don't know if you've ever seen my Big Fat Greek Wedding yet.
Yes.
Okay, so that's my Big Fat Greek life.
Nice,
and
nice.
And Greek was my first language, grew up very, very, very strictly Greek. Then, I also experienced a lot of abuse, not from within my immediate family, but people that came into our home that should have been trustworthy and weren't. And so for 12 years, I was deeply abused. So I was very damaged, full of a lot of pain and unforgiveness and shame and guilt and anger. And so all of that came through. Then I came to Christ in my very late teens and really started to be a fully devoted follower of Jesus at about 22 when I went to Hillsong Church and kind of really got discipled. And so from that point on, I started being involved in youth ministry, helping constantly at-risk young people, communicating to youth and women and just kind of sharing my story mostly and giving people hope, telling them that Jesus can redeem your past. Fast track, I did that for about 20 years, or just roughly 18. And then one day I was in an airport. I don't know if you remember, in Portugal, a young girl called Madeline was taken. She was 5 years old, maybe 8 or 9 years ago now.
Big global news.
Big global news. I was in Portugal then, so it was crazy, flying through Europe, and Interpol was on high alert, obviously. So I get off the airplane at Thessaloniki in Greece to speak at a women's conference. All over the airport, I'm seeing posters of young women and children. And because I read Greek, it just said missing, missing, missing. I was dumbfounded. I thought, what is going on? I called my friend who heads up UNICEF and I said, what is all this? And she went on to say, these are the alleged victims of human trafficking. Mm-hmm. So we could pause there. I'm thinking, I was 40, almost 41, just had my second child and went, you've got to be kidding. I never even, it was unfathomable to me that slavery still existed. So we're talking, you know, 8, 9 years ago. And she went on to give me stats that I just could not comprehend. 27 million, 30 million, forced labor, slavery, sex slavery, children, women, men. And as I, you know, kind of the journey went on and I thought, I started to think, that could be me. Because if I was born, especially those children around Greece, if it was Albania, Romania, so many of those nations where kids are trafficked from, if I was not born in Australia where there was a rule of law and there was an efficient adoption system set up, then I could have been one of those children because my birth certificate does not have a name on it. It says child's name, literally typed in the word unnamed, number 2508 of 1966. So you've got all these unnamed kids in orphanages that traffickers go in and say, well, that's my niece. You know, that's and I could have been one of those children. And then I felt through my quiet time and my Bible reading, God really speaking to my heart, particularly out of the story in Joseph chapter 50, verse 20, where he said to his brothers, you meant this for evil against me, but God meant it for good. I started to look at my life and the pain and the adoption and the abuse and thought it would be just like God to weave all those broken, bad things together for good and not only rescue me, but then enable me to be able to rescue others. I didn't think I could do anything, but I knew I had a mouth and I had the ear of many segments of the church and a story. And so if I could make it real for people and say, look, these are not just numbers, like numbers are numbing and dehumanizing and desensitizing. But when I put up a document that says number 2708 and I go, that's me, you've now just put a face to a number, well, there's 27 million of them. And I think it changed everything, really.
And it really, it's you've become so known in this space at a time when it appears that evangelicals, not just evangelicals, but evangelicals have really decided to lean in on the on issues of slavery, sexual slavery, prostitution, and forced prostitution and more. Why do you think that in this time Christians seem more interested or more engaged on the subject maybe than in times past?
Yeah, I think it's because we're reading the Bible better. I think that's really what it comes down to because, you know, James is so clear, faith without works is dead. I don't think that in God's eyes there was never a disparity between compassion, good works, and the gospel. It was it's never been either or. I don't know why we made it either or. First and foremost, my bent is to mission and evangelism. I mean, that's what my husband and I have been doing for 20 years.
And I know you self-identify as evangelist at different times.
So oh, yeah, totally.
Your passion for what you do.
I would say that, and that's what drives this. And I remember even before we started the A21 campaign, we've been doing mission to Europe for, you know, I originate in Australia, which in itself is a big mission field, and Europe is so desperately needing the gospel. And so for 20 years we've been over there, and I was always wondering what is going to be the key. And, you know, I would go to Greece, I would go to these countries where you couldn't even proselytize, you know, 5 years ago. And even back then I felt that justice is going to be the key but to being a doorway for the message of Jesus coming through. And I had no idea then, here I am now, 9 years later, 10 offices around the world, nations where you still can't preach the gospel, but because of the doors A21's opened, you know, they let us do and say whatever, case in point. We've been working with the Vietnamese government. You know, there is no church exists. But it's amazing when you have, because of the one-child policy in China, so many of those young girls were killed, obviously, because we wanted sons. So now you go 20, 30 years later, the boys have grown up.
Sure.
What don't we have?
Sure.
So then from that whole Mekong region, they're trafficking girls in to service that need. So governments are losing women of childbearing age. And once it affects your economy, it's amazing how things start to matter. Yeah. So we've been in really high-level discussions of what can you do. And Christians tend to be one of the only people group that will help put an extra food on the table, find a bed at their own without asking for any money.
Right.
And so the church that doesn't exist, they're very happy to work with those people because we won't shame those girls. Yeah. We'll bring them back, we'll love them, and we'll help restore them. And so I just think the genius of God, you know, I'm watching it all work together.
Yeah. What are some things that people can do now, some practical steps that churches and Christian leaders can do now? If you don't mind, just talk to them.
I think the important thing is to begin even a conversation about this. And I think there's so much shame around it. I know in many congregations, pastors are really nervous because you kind of feel like I'm taking a lid off a can of worms. And what about children? I have a 9-year-old and a 12-year-old. And there's certainly age-appropriate ways to discuss this, but we can't ignore it any longer. The world is so connected. And on our phones, we are just so connected to this issue. And pornography predominantly drives sex trafficking. So I think it's something that we can't sweep under the carpet anymore. And we need to find great ways to take the lid off the can of worms and say, well, what can I do? There is more of us than there are trafficked victims or traffickers. And if there are, you know, let's go best case scenario, 2 billion Christians on the earth and 30 million people in slavery, well, you do the math. There's more light than there is darkness. If the light would just come out and begin to be a voice, then we could just obliterate the darkness just through awareness and through saying we are not going to help support systems of injustice that allow trafficking to take place. And I think that's a very important thing, that we start to think about, where do I spend my money? Mm. What is it that I'm viewing? Am I myself involved in patterns of behavior that I'm not even aware of that are actually helping to promote slavery? And I think we can become, there's so much information. We can spend our money differently. We can talk about things differently. I think we can watch different programs. We can turn different things off that I think could instantly begin to make a difference.
That's a good word. It's a good word. One of the things I'll always get asked is about statistics, and you threw out some statistics at the beginning, and I've actually written some. For example, there's a Super Bowl statistic that's often sort of thrown around that actually doesn't have a lot of evidence to it, that Super Bowl is the biggest human trafficking event.
Right.
But those numbers of almost 30 million, I mean, those are evidenced by multiple organizations.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Those are solid. And we live in an era. I was talking to we talk about age appropriate. I have a 16-year-old and a 12-year-old, and both of those girls, they are aware that girls are bought and sold at their age, and they're concerned about it, and they're engaged in it. And so my hope and desire is that what you're doing with you're in 10 countries, right? Let's see that word continue to spread. And I'm thankful for the light you're shining in a very dark place. And it's in the darkest place where we need both justice and the justification of the gospel.
Absolutely.
And I'm thankful for your passion for both.
Thanks, Ed. Thank you.
So for resources mentioned on the show today, visit edstetzer.com, edstetzer.com. And always check out for past episodes there as well. Thanks for joining us and having a great week.
Thanks for joining Ed Stetzer and his team for this week's radio edition of The Exchange. Hear this and other past broadcasts of The Exchange, read up on the latest trends from Lifeway Research, and insights and articles from Ed and his team by visiting edstetzer.com. The Exchange Radio has been presented by Lifeway Christian Resources in cooperation with Faith Radio and Northwestern Media.